at the heart of what I observed with Dan is the way he treated people. Like, truly, people just enjoyed being around him. And that's the thing that I try to pass on to others at this point in our lives and careers is there's a better way to live and work. And my God, how much more enjoyable is it when you do operate that way? So you can be effective and you can have a good time doing it. And that's how Dan operated.
He showed that you can be who you are and be successful. And for someone to be able to go into P&G and be in a rock band and talk like a rock star, but still have the command and respect of all of your business partners because he was so talented and grounded in doing what was right for the business, it showed that you can get beyond stereotypes and be successful.
Great companies are all about the people. Good people become great leaders, mentors for work and life.
Welcome to Learnings from Leaders, the P&G Alumni Podcast. I'm Andrew Tarvin, humor engineer.
And I'm Roman Segel, recovering marketer. Andrew and I both got our start at P&G, the Procter & Gamble company, where we both had the opportunity to work with some amazing people. And as you may know, many leaders across industries got their start at P&G. In this series, through conversations with fellow P&G alums, we hope to go deeper with the leaders you already know but want to know more about. How they got their start, how they make it work, and what keeps them going.
It's kind of like bringing a microphone to a cup of coffee, or in my case, hot chocolate.
On today's show, we're talking about P&G alumni leader Dan Hamilton with P&G alums Bob Arnold, a media innovation leader at Google, and Aaron Fetters, the CEO of Transparent Partners. But this is a slightly different series of conversations. Dan Hamilton was a longtime friend and mentor to not just me, but multiple generations of leaders. Sadly, Dan Hamilton passed away suddenly last December of 2022. Since then, many of us have gathered to talk about what Dan meant to us. This is the second of two conversations with friends and colleagues who knew Dan over the years, with Bob and Aaron having worked with Dan in the early digital days of P&G back in the early to mid-2000s. Dan Hamilton was one of my earliest friends and mentors at P&G. Honestly, so much of my own personal style, approach, and knowledge was inspired by him and our many conversations early on in my career. Dan was so much more than an experienced marketing, media, and creative leader. Dan was a dreamer, a mentor, and someone who had a passion for coloring outside the lines and breaking all the rules and bringing us along for the ride. Dan fought like hell for what he believed in and those that he cared about. On paper, he was a marketing maverick, but Dan hated anything that was on paper. Dan was a bandmate, a father, and a friend. He was born in Seattle in 1969 to Valerie and Vernon Hamilton. Vernon, known to many as Bud, is actually also a P&G alum who retired after 37 years as a VP in sales, marketing, and governance. Dan once told me that his dad's one of the reasons he came to P&G, which I guess so many of us should thank Bud for. Dan grew up in Cincinnati, later studying journalism and jazz guitar at the University of Cincinnati and CCM. He co-founded the band Spook Floaters, which he toured with, and then he went back to get his Master's of Computer Science from Miami of Ohio, after which he joined P&G as one of the earliest digital marketing managers, starting the beauty business on Olay. Dan quickly changed the game in digital, rising to become a media leader of Olay, which at the time was arguably the company's most innovative brand in media that the rest of us looked up to. Over nearly 15 years, he got some of the most interesting roles in marketing, working on Olay Global Design, on P&G's corporate brand, and personal care. Dan spent another 7 years in Colorado as a marketing, media, and creative leader at White Wave Foods as it later merged with Danone. In 2021, Dan joined Ocean Spray as the company's head of marketing center of excellence. Across his entire career, Dan was a friend and mentor to so many of us who had the privilege of working with him. And honestly, Dan was always one of the alumni leaders I wanted to reconnect and chat with on this Learnings from Leaders podcast. But we lost touch, more so during the years of the pandemic when we actually started on this show. While one of my many regrets is never getting to see Dan play a Spook Floater show, another one is losing touch with my friend and missing out on all the stories that we could have shared, laughed, and learned from. Suddenly he was gone, passing away on the same day as one of his idols, John Lennon. In the months that followed Dan's passing, I've been thinking about how to capture some of his learnings and stories for all of his many friends and family who he survived by. So let's dive right in. We hope you'll enjoy our conversations about our friend Dan Hamilton.
I'm Aaron Fetters. I'm the CEO at Transparent Partners. I've known Dan since around 2006.
Hi, I'm Bob Arnold. I am a digital innovation manager at Google, and I've known Dan since 2004.
Guys, how'd you first meet Dan?
Yeah, I think it was when I joined the Olay brand around 2006, when digital was just becoming a big thing, and Procter & Gamble in particular was trying to figure out how do we market on the internet. And I wanted to get closer to all of that. And Dan was running the digital marketing program for Olay at that time. So I was one of two or three other IT individuals working on Olay. And, you know, you get to meet this guy, Dan Hamilton. And the first thing you notice is like, this is not your normal P&G employee, period, but certainly not your normal P&G IT employee. Very, very different character, right? Very different character. He's got his goatee and longer hair and just a very cool laid back style.
How long was the hair? How long was the hair at that moment? Like how far down?
Yeah, he was just, you know, somewhere closer to the shoulders at that point, just above the shoulders. But he was just the coolest cat in the world, right? Like so cool. So you kind of wanted to get to know him more, but I was just, who is this guy? Who is this guy, Dan Hamilton? He's pretty cool. But the thing I remember, like, in terms of first meeting him, is like everyone on the Olay brand just adored Dan Hamilton, right? Like he was the guy everybody on that whole brand wanted to kind of be around, hang out, learn from, have a project with, quite honestly, right? They wanted to have a project with him. And there's some pretty funny stories. We shared a manager at that point, and we had some pretty funny stories about sharing that manager and a couple other individuals on that team. He became such an incredible influence on me and then actually guided me into, eventually I took over the role of digital marketing for Olay when he had then moved on into more of a traditional media ownership role on the Olay brand.
Yeah. And then actually didn't like, I want to chase that one more step and then I want to ask Bob, but mm-hmm. After you switched into Dan's digital role, when we went into like the more, he kind of functionally switched to media marketing.
Right. You know, it was the interesting thing about P&G digital marketing in those early days is all three of us were part of. I love to tell the story to others who weren't there. Guess where digital marketing started? Out of IT, right? It wasn't a marketing function. It was who in the world knows what to do with this thing called the internet? Give it to the IT guys. They're the ones that can figure
it
out.
Give it to the non-traditional IT guys. And Dan True. Was one of them.
Right? That's right. Exactly. That's exactly right. The ones who didn't want to implement SAP. Oh, sorry, Bob. I guess that was you implementing SAP. But most of the IT people, wouldn't have really wanted to get into this.
I actually never implemented it.
Oh.
So
that's why you didn't last that long in traditional IT.
That's why they moved you. But yeah, so the internet came out of the IT department, which was really interesting, right? And so when Dan moved into media, I think many of us, all three of us on this discussion, kind of felt like, this is our thing. Like, we love this. This is fun. I don't want to implement SAP. I would rather work on the future of marketing at Procter, which we could already see by 2006, 7, 8. The future of marketing is going to be in this thing called digital. And let's go figure that out. So they said, hey, listen, you've got this digital background, but you're also more of a like a data and analytics guy. We need to build digital CMK capabilities. So as Dan went over into traditional media for Olay, I ended up going into digital CMK and helping to build some of the core capabilities for Procter on that side.
Bob, how'd you first meet Dan? Where were you in your career?
So I first met Dan when I just entered the interactive marketing realm, as we called it at Procter back then in the early 2000s. And what that basically meant for the vast majority of the interactive marketing managers back then was email marketing. What we did was we worked with an agency and we emailed people. And there's a lot of science and cool things that happened back then in email marketing were sort of blazing the trail. And, you know, I thought that was a lot of fun and sort of the pinnacle of digital marketing. But what Dan did along with Tim Kopp was they did a roadshow around the company sharing what they were learning. And it was really exciting for me because Dan had a great reputation throughout the company, even though we were so decentralized, as doing new and exciting things. And so having the chance to basically go to one of their roadshows just to see what was going on was exciting for me. And basically what they did was they showed that digital marketing was much more than email. And it was about creative, paid media, getting our message out there. And it wasn't just, you know, here are the opportunities, but here's how to think about the opportunities. Here are the consumer insights into the space, how to really think about it. And it really opened my mind to what innovation really looked like, how to best serve the consumer. And it was just amazing all the stuff that they brought to the table, and they were so openly sharing across the board with everyone. So that was the first point. And then after that, I really thought what he did was awesome. So I set up just regular time with him. And so he worked in the downtown office and I worked in Wynton Woods area or whatever. And I would come down to see him and go out to like Red Fox, I think is what it was called.
Yeah,
his favorite joint. He was a straight shooter about everything, but he could never explain to me why he actually liked that place. And he made me go there.
The fries were awesome. It was cash only.
Yeah.
It was across the street.
Yeah. So it was pretty awesome.
It's funny. That roadshow that him and Dan and Tim did, I came in I was hired in to do digital, right? And it was a bunch of weirdo IT guys who I totally like started to gel with. I remember during my internship, because I was in hair care across the floor from skincare, and they were like, you need to meet these two guys, Dan and Steve. And you couldn't find two more opposite people, but they were the same in the sense that they were so friendly and open. And again, sure, that was Procter, but it was like, they weren't your father's IT people, you know? Like they were cool and they were like hanging out with the brand team. And there was another dude named Eric. Like those three, the way they carried themselves and the way they walked around the floor and built relationships, like because I was downtown with these guys, but as an intern and as a new hire, I spent a lot of time, like at least once a day, if I wasn't talking to one of those three or downstairs on the second floor in Tim's office, I was doing something wrong. And the one thing they always told me is like, walk the floor, meet people. Yeah. Talk to everyone, build relationships. They're going to trust you if they know who you are and know what you're working on. But like, get to know these are pretty cool people. These are good people. Get to know them. And walk the floor is kind of like one thing I still do to this day.
Yep.
Yeah. So I got to hear, what's one of your like earliest Dan stories?
For me, I don't know if it's the first stories, but it's the story I remember best was so when I would go out to lunch with Dan, we would talk about work and whatever the latest thing that he was working on and an idea, and would talk about how I could basically steal it and you know, share what I've learned to try to make things go a little bit faster. But we also had a lot of personal conversations as well, and I learned that he was really into music and he was in jam band, and he said that he really liked the Grateful Dead. And so eventually he invited me to one of his shows, and so I went to go check it out. You know, what's funny was up to that point, like I'd never listened to the Grateful Dead. I do have a wide range of musical tastes, but they tend to be quite obscure. And so I just assumed Grateful Dead was, you know, like a heavy metal thrash band or something. And I was like, I remember
basically you're bread and butter.
Yeah, I remember thinking like, wow, Dan's pretty mellow for, you know, a heavy metal guy basically. And so
because he looks like a metal guy. He looked like a metal guy.
Yeah, you could say that.
He looks like David Grohl.
Yeah,
well, Dave Grohl is kind of a metal guy, but yeah. So anyway, we go to a show. I think like one of my roommates come and went somewhere in over the Rhine, and I can't remember the name of the place.
I remember him playing at Stanley's. Did you ever go to Stanley's Pub?
I've been there, but that's not where we went.
Okay.
Yeah. It was somewhere, it was a big place, and they filled it up. You know, me and my buddy go, we're getting drinks and sort of hanging out in the back. And it's like, wow, they're really good. Not what I expected, you know.
You were wearing like a Slayer shirt. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they're playing, and then I was like, wow, they're really good. And then Dan started to sing, and I was like, wow, I never expected him to be a singer, and he was really good. And you know, that was really awesome. And so they're playing, and we see the show, talk to him, and during the middle of the show at this bar, You know, I see like the biggest rat I've ever seen in my whole life run across the floor. No one else sees it. Like no one, like my buddy doesn't see it. No one sees it. And whatever. So after the show, we say bye to Dan and we go out, whatever. So the next time I have lunch with him, like, hey, Dan, you know, your show is great. And the place we're at, I saw the biggest rat I've ever seen in my whole life run across the floor. And he's like, oh, yeah, man. That place has tons of rats. I see them from the stage all the time. He was like, you should put like a saddle on them. They're so big. Yeah. So that's like, that's my quintessential Dan story. He's like, yeah, it's fine. Just put a saddle on them and have fun. So.
Oh, that's great. I have so many things I want to say about Dan. Like just listening to Bob's thing, I got a ton of thoughts. So I'll say the first thing I remember, I'm going to talk about Dan from a capability standpoint, an expertise standpoint, right? Because number one, when I met him, you think like, who is this guy that doesn't look like P&G? But then the next thing you find out is everybody will tell you, whoa, Dan's a genius, right? Like Dan was a genius and he knew things about technical capabilities that other people didn't understand. And what I marvel at right now, right, is Dan was doing stuff in 2005, 6, 7 that we're still trying to perfect, like the industry talks about now, right? In 2023, he was the first one that ever introduced me to a couple of things, right? Market mix modeling. I mean, here we are. Now I'm talking about market mix modeling. Dan brought market mix modeling as a methodology to Olay. And just for anyone who doesn't understand it, market mix modeling is a form of, you know, advertising effectiveness or marketing effectiveness measurement. Dan was the first person to ever introduce not only me, but most of, I think the P&G, you know, it was probably Tim Kopp right there along with him, as Bob mentioned. But I still remember Dan for the first person really trying to implement market mix modeling.
Well, because he knew that the way to scale digital, obviously there's the whole story of it's reach, it's not email.
Right.
Yeah, to prove value. And whatever the holy grail of how we measure and prove things, and he was one of those early people who was like, yeah, we can't just keep doing innovation for innovation's sake. It's we got to speak it apples to apples with everything
exactly.
Else. If we're going to scale this thing.
Put it on the same playing field as television and print, which were the dominant you know, forms of media at that time, particularly for the Olay brand. Print was one of the biggest drivers of marketing effectiveness for Olay, and then obviously television. But he wanted to show the digital stood up to those. And it did, in fact, for Olay, right? And email, as Bob's talking about. Olay at that time had probably the most effective CRM email marketing program in the company.
In the company.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, at my startup, my current startup, one of our values is find a way or make one. And that's what Dan was doing back then. Like, we didn't know how to do it. And to be clear, Dan didn't know how to do it either. And he probably roped in through relationships and friendships and humility of people smarter than him, but a curiosity to like, I'm going to go ask smarter people to help me figure out how to do this. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to, through sheer force of like will and personality, find a way to make it happen.
Yeah. But you know what? Like, here's a great career lesson that you can take away from Dan is he wasn't obstructed by some sort of preconceived notion of what you're supposed to do, right? He was maybe one of the first P&G people I started to interact with who I feel that way about, because P&G, we had a mold, right? There's a mold of how you're supposed to operate, the type of employee we hired. It was a very specific profile and there's a lot of benefits to it. Dan completely broke that profile. But in the process, he was the guy who, you know, there's no preconceived notion of how we do these things. I'm going to just figure out how we do them. There's a lot to be learned from, you know, the way that he operated inside of a company that was so rigid as Procter. He didn't have to be rigid and yet was super effective, right? So mixed modeling was the first thing. The other thing, and Bob can probably even shed more light on this, I'm not sure who the real originator of this was, but for me, the person who introduced me to something that we now lovingly refer to as the any second ad principles.
That's all Dan.
Was Dan.
Yeah.
Great.
He came up with that idea and we stole it liberally and used it. I've used it at many other companies since then.
As have I. I've used it everywhere I've gone, right? This concept that Hey, look, there's a way to evaluate the creative that we're putting out in the marketplace. In this case, in the online world, this was online display ads, and it was called the Any Second Ad Principles. And it was like, you have to think about display ads on the internet like billboards on the information superhighway. That was the phrase that I to this day, he may not have coined it, but Dan was the one who introduced me to that idea, that concept. These are billboards on the information superhighway, meaning you're just driving down the internet. Nobody's on the internet to just stop and look at ads.
You're doing something else. You're checking your email.
You're doing something else. But that ad needs to be able to catch attention and leave an impression in the blink of an eye. The Any Second Ad Principles, right? And oh my God, like how present was that? Like, you know, fast forward to today, every brand I know of could still benefit if they actually acted on the Any Second Ad Principles. Almost none do, I would say. I would venture to say.
I train people on this to this day. And what's so funny about that is, you know, Dan was one of those first people who, he was one of the first people to like test and learn at scale.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I've got this media budget. And so he found a firm, right? Find a way or make one.
He did.
That could do digital copy testing. And I OTX. Remember it was OTX.
OTX.
And he found a partner in crime with a guy named David, I think. And they did a crap ton of tests and he built it into his training. And he had all this data and these principles. And I don't know if he coined it or he worked with someone to come up with it, but he knew that it had to be breakthrough, branded, and beautiful.
Yep.
And I remember going to him because I was sitting in hair care and he was in skincare and I was like literally drafting off of his work and asking, you know, sitting with him, taking notes, like typing up his script as he was talking. And he was like, you're going to use this? I was like, yeah, man. Do you mind? He's like, yeah, man. Because he wasn't precious about it being his.
No.
He wanted it to spread the knowledge. And I remember because right around that time, I was given this opportunity to go help commercialize and scale. And he's like, I'm focused on the Olay business, but if you can take this and get it out there and just say that we're doing great things on Olay, take it with you, man. Yeah. And I mean, I literally took it around the world.
Yeah.
Tim, the other guy we worked with, like took me under his wing. And you know, it's funny, Bob, you say a lot of times about another friend of ours, Ted, that, you know, almost all of the smart things you learned and you did was just by like taking notes by what this guy told you. And like those first, Dan was the media guy, but somehow I got a reputation of being the media guy because I went out and I like skipped my day job around Procter to go and like evangelize. And I was using like Dan's, like literally Dan's script the whole time.
Yeah. I mean, I would say the brilliance of the Any Second Ad Principles is that it was truly grounded in consumer insight and behavior. And P&G back then, especially, was basically a TV advertiser. And what people would try to do is basically take their expensive TV idea and stick it on a banner ad.
Right.
Because if it worked on TV, it should work here. And everyone can recognize the greatness of the creative and will stop to watch. And Dan basically had the guts to tell people that that's not the case. And, you know, even if you believed in what he was saying is that, you know, people, you only have a split second to make an impression. You know, the other way to view that is that, well, this is an impossible medium. This is, we will never be able to make it work because we need at least 30 seconds or 15 seconds with sight, sound, and motion to break through. And instead, because the insight was so strong, and if you really understood the insight, then you could do something about it, even though it was literally the antithesis of what had made P&G and other CPG companies so powerful. And so I thought that was really fascinating to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I totally agree. Most companies need to follow this and it would help them greatly, but they don't.
What's so funny is it's not that he was prescient about it, but the simplicity of that stop, hold, close, Any Second Ad, and stop, hold, close came from Shopper Marketing, right?
I was going to say, that's an FMOT.
Yeah, but in the like short attention span economy that we've completely moved into, it like holds more water now than ever before.
Fully agree.
And he figured it out before I mean, frankly, some people still haven't figured it out. I see, it's like, I can't help but not see a terrible ad when I look now because of like, we've all been like conditioned into the matrix.
Do you guys remember the best way to learn these things from Dan? Like if you wanted to learn something from Dan, what'd you have to do? Yeah,
get a lot of secondhand smoke.
Exactly. That's the next.
So let's talk about Dan Hamilton's smoke breaks. Can one of you guys explain it to us?
I never participated. So,
cause you didn't work down. You weren't cool. You didn't work downtown. Yeah, to be clear. To this day, I still don't smoke, but the amount of secondhand smoke from Dan he was cool about it, but like he wanted to take, like every time I'd go back to Cincinnati after I either moved to New York working for the company, quit and working at a startup, coming back to Cincinnati to pitch or work with Procter, Dan was one of the few people I wanted to meet up with downtown. And I mean, the only way to hang out with Dan was to go for a walk and a smoke break.
Everyone on the Olay brand knew, hey, if I really need to get like 5 minutes of Dan's time, just undistracted, really dive on something, you went down to his next smoke break. And I never knew if this is going to get him in trouble with his wife or, you know, or whatever, because I think he was, he tried to keep it kind of low key. But it was the best moments to go down, and we would go down, you know, I guess it would be the south side of the P&G general office. You go out there by the big pillars, and Dan would have a cigarette and you could talk, and it was great.
It wasn't those cool gardens where you could walk under the archway and stuff. No. You had to be like literally in that like little guarded space.
There's a big column, and you stood there leaning on the column, and he would give you his full attention while he was having a cigarette break. And that was some of the most productive time. In fact, it was the moment you could come down and just gripe about something, right? Like, oh my God, Dan, how do I deal with this? You know, and he would, again, maybe it was the fact that he was smoking a cigarette. He was very relaxed and calm, and he would have some great piece of sage advice for you every time. But everyone knew the best way to get Dan's advice, go to a cigarette break.
I mean, it was like, it was his version of the therapy couch for the rest of us.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And I mean, again, it's one of those things to this day, like I don't smoke, but you know, now that we're older and, you know, we have people coming to us for advice, wanting to gripe, et cetera. And, you know, it's harder in the Zoom. It's even in the Zoom era, right? So like when I'm at work in New York City or traveling, it's like, hey, let's go for a walk. Let's go for a walk around the block and let's just have a conversation. And even in the Zoom era to this day, and I don't know if it's the same kind of like presence of it, if you and I need to really talk about something, as much as I want to Zoom with you, let's just cop on the phone and both go for a walk and talk about it.
Yeah,
with our Bluetooth headphones on. It's the virtual smoke break still exists.
Well, I want to build on, I do want to play off of something Bob talked about, right? The music side of Dan.
Yeah.
I've thought about this a lot. My biggest regret of not having more time with Dan, and like you mentioned, Raman, wanting to go back, I wish I'd gone back and spent some more time together. My biggest regret is I very much like Bob. Well, first of all, I knew Grateful Dead was not a, you know, metal band, but I wasn't a fan. Like never in my life had I even really considered Grateful Dead in my music considerations. And then I met Dan, and I learned he was, you know, in this band, and he had gone to the Cincinnati like Conservatory of Music, was a classically trained jazz guitarist, but yet he was the lead guy in a Grateful Dead cover band. And you know, I thought, well, that's really cool. And I'd love to see him. And I did go to, you know, shows, like I said, Stanley's pub. And he was amazing. As Bob said, he's really amazing. But it wasn't until about 3 years ago or so, maybe 4 years ago, I started dating the woman who's now my wife. And she was a big Dead fan. So I started listening a little bit more Dead. I think I'm a little older at this point, and I think I could somewhat appreciate the Dead more. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, like by today, almost all I listen to is the Grateful Dead, truly. And I think back, and all I want to do is go watch Dan Hamilton play a show. Like truly, it would mean the world to me now, the way I now appreciate the Dead, to go listen to Dan play. it would just be incredible. And that's my biggest regret by far, is here I happen to be close to one of the, these guys were good. The Spook Flutters is the name of the band. They're good, really good. And Dan was incredible. And I just hate it so much that I missed that. Like, I didn't appreciate that at the point when I was working with Dan and could go see his shows, you know, around Cincinnati. That is my biggest regret. I love it that I knew him and that part of him.
Yeah.
I hate that I didn't respect it and appreciate it the way I do now.
You know, it's so funny, like, early on, like from the moment I was an intern, like, you know, the two of the like badges I carry on my sleeve are that I'm into comic books and I'm into rock music. Like, I can like go toe to toe on a lot of different genres, classic, alt, punk. I moved to Cincinnati and I spent more time going to shows late at night and coming to work late, late, because I was at a show at Bogart's or the Southgate House the night before. And Dan was one of the few people I confessed my rock love to. And he would talk with me about any band I want to talk to. Jimmy Eat World, Sufjan Stevens. You know, he didn't agree with my taste in Weezer, but he liked them. Or he would talk about it. And he would be like, oh, yeah, that one song and that riff in Only in Dreams or something, right? And it literally wasn't for a couple of years that one of you guys were like, you know, he's in this band called Spook Float or something. I don't know. And I never went to a show. Big regret. I'm one of the few like young punks that came up under Dan that never went to a Spook Floater show. But he never brought it up.
Yeah.
He just wanted to talk about music with me and my taste. And he was just so gracious in the conversation. I remember we literally had a 15-minute conversation one day in the LA bullpen. I'm guessing Lynch or you weren't sitting at your desk that day because I just like plopped down and just talked. And we were talking about the song from Weeds, the Ticky Taffy song. And he's like, oh, such a great jam. And he's like, and he starts like humming it out. And he's just like infectious, like his love of music. Like you wanted to talk about music. It's like, you're a fellow music lover. You have taste. Yeah. My regret is I talked about music all the time with him. Mm-hmm. It was like a shared love, but other than, oh, I used to tour with a band. Like, that's all I ever knew.
Yeah.
Up until, like, you guys started, like, revealing his secret.
He was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he was – you had to get it out of him. You know, I basically had to invite myself to his show.
Yeah.
Because I was so intrigued by it. You know, I figured out how to get on his mailing list. So I was telling him about it one day, and he's like, oh, I'm so sorry you're getting the email. And I was like, well, Dan, as you remember – think about your marketing skills. I opted in, which means I want to hear from it. And so, yeah, he was very humble about it for sure. So I appreciated that as well.
How do you fit that much humility into a person who has so many talents, right? Like, I do think about that. Bob is incredibly correct. He was one of the most humble people I've known and simultaneously most talented, right? Obviously wildly talented in his career and then incredibly talented musically. I just don't know how you fit that much humility into that kind of an individual. It was incredible.
I mean, he always had something to say and he usually had the right answer, but he left the space for you to talk your piece and to hear you out. That's something I'm bad at, but like, again, he's one of those like early role models of like, let the other person talk. Let the other person get their thing out. There's some gem in there.
Yeah.
And he was listening for it.
Yeah.
He was listening for the gem that you were going to say that was then going to trigger the thing that he could add value. And he could like, it was like jazz almost with him.
Good analogy. I like that. Another great career and life lesson from Dan that I'm trying to learn myself and pass on to my teams today is like, be bold. Right. I think too often we're our own worst enemy. Like we hold ourselves back. There was nothing not bold about Dan, you know, like he might be humble, but he wasn't afraid to just speak his mind or to go out and do the thing that you're like, oh my God, did he just do that? He would, of course, win the contest of who can get management to say this certain word the most times. And it was great. Like those were really, really great memories and, you know, hilarious things. There were projects that were hilarious. Honestly, Lisa Piskarsik, she was another great brand manager who worked with Dan. They became very, very close. And Lisa has just a magnetic personality as well. Really, really funny. And so her and Dan together were always fun. And Dan led this project that was very innovative at the time. So we launched a product in the early 2000s called olayforyou.com.
Yep.
And it was one of the first more sophisticated product finders because, again, Bob brought this up earlier, grounded in consumer insights, right? We're all good P&Gers. We're grounded in consumer insights. And the insight was women will walk up to the skincare aisle needing a product and walk away empty-handed simply because it's way too complicated, right? Like hundreds and hundreds of SKUs on that one aisle, hard to interpret, like, what do these different products do? I don't know which one's right for me. So we, come up with this olayforyou.com product. And, there was an outside agency that built all this sort of, logic behind it. It was a pretty simple tree logic, but it did, what's your skin type? What's your, pigmentation? Are you dealing with certain skin issues? All these things. And it would then recommend all the products for you. And then that was Dan's, Dan really led it. But the way that he managed agencies, and we could probably go into a whole thing on that. He was simultaneously a genius and a comedian with the way that he managed agencies, right? Because we all had somewhat tenuous relationships with agencies back then. And, Dan was just a master at crafting, whether it was a, wow, this really sucks, he was a master at passing on the message of this really sucks without ever saying that. He was a master at trying to get the best work out of the agencies. I learned so much just watching him navigate that. And he made everyone he spoke to feel special. I swear to this day, I would say he made everyone he was on a call with feel special. That was a superpower that I observed, and I particularly saw it as we did this olayforyou.com launch. He was just really incredible at navigating all that. And again, I don't know. It's like jazz music, like a lot of improv, but beautiful music that comes out of it, right? It was incredible.
I mean, you've kind of tumbled into this a little bit, Aaron, about the stylistic things we kind of learned from Dan. Bob, were there any kind of pro tips, stylistic things, learnings from Dan?
I think the number one thing I learned from Dan was how to rise above the politics and do what's right for the business. And it sounds simple, but when you're young and impressionable and, we're all in IT at the time, and IT is a support function to marketing, and there's good reason for support functions to have quote unquote agendas, just ways to help maximize the spotlight on their contributions and things along those lines. It's very important. I get it, but at a certain point when that kind of stuff happens, and this happens at all big companies, you sort of start to lose the plot a bit and you're not helping to grow the business the way that you should. And what Dan helped me do was understand where other people were coming from, what was important to them. And then, for me to take that level of ownership over what they wanted to. So, especially with digital marketing in the early 2000s, a lot of it was razzle dazzle. That's the way we had to do it to sort of stand out, because TV was still, people still watch TV and things like that, which doesn't happen as much today. And so we had to do something to stand out. And sometimes that led you away from the fundamentals of what was really important. And so Dan really helped ground me in, at the end of the day, we're trying to sell product and get people to use what we think is a superior product. And we want people to know it. And digital is another arm to do it. It's not just about the sizzle. And I took that on as I moved into roles, and I too could become, the favorite of partners across the business, because it turns out caring about what they cared about, was important, and having shared goals. So
yes, another call it like dream manager that kind of we were all worked with, a guy named Andy. I think he's the one that told me, like, focus on the people first, the company second, and the functional stuff, the agendas third. And when you did that, right, like really relate to the people you're working with. How can I help you not just do the thing you got to do for your job, but like the thing that's going to like light you up the most, right? Like if you do that first, and obviously in service of the bigger picture of the Olay business, the beauty business, the media business, right? If you can focus on that, like, but again, lead with the people. Like, it's just like,
yeah,
I keep coming back to like so much of my personal like philosophy and style just came from like watching these masters at work, you know? And it was like, and again, being so cool by doing it, you know?
That's the one thing, like, I still wish, yeah, I wish I had that cool demeanor that he had, you know? Like, he was just so cool and calm. That's, I still strive for that. Never shaken.
So, for the longest time, I was on the board of the P&G Alumni Network, which led to this podcast, and I've stepped off the board since, and I've become very good friends with a lot of the older alums who are in it. The chairman of the board, Ed, to this day, I remember probably 2 years in, you know, of like this begrudging respect for me. He's like, Raman, I've never been on a call with a guy who says dude as much as you do. And I just like smiled from ear to ear because like I totally took it. Like that approach, that demeanor is like me like just mirroring and trying to be Dan when I grow up.
Yeah. You know, I think the other like fascinating thing about Dan is Aaron talked about this earlier, but P&G has a certain mold that it sort of crafts people into, and it's either, you know, you either do it this way or it's basically the highway. What I think is really interesting about Dan is he resisted that and was still successful. And I'd argue because he resisted, you know, the pressures of P&G, and, you know, I think he had like the managerial support to do that. He could take on these unorthodox roles like running media. I remember the day he told me he was going to do that on Olay, and I was like, what the hell is that?
That didn't exist, right? Like that role did not exist.
It didn't exist. Yeah. And he took it on, and it was really exciting. I think the other thing that's very inspirational about Dan is he didn't have, you know, the standard route into P&G. He wasn't an MBA, you know, and he studied music, and he didn't come to P&G straight out of college. And so he was like a more experienced hire, but not necessarily in marketing. And he was still able to like show his maturity, his wisdom, but then still be open-minded enough and brave enough to do new and exciting things. And, yeah, you know, wow. That had a huge impact on the work that P&G did in the digital space.
I think I kind of know the story because I've heard it from Dan, but he finished college and he started touring with Spook Floaters. And then his dad, a retired or current P&G bud, was like, got a master's in CS and got the interview. And that's how he joined the IT org. But to your point about this like non-traditional path, Dan studied music, went and was a touring musician, doing lots of things that touring musicians do, and then got the technical degree that got his foot in the door at the company. I mean, was that the story?
Yeah, I agree. I don't know like all the full details, Roman. I do remember this. Like Dan would have told you there were definitely points in his young adult life he would have said, me work at P&G, are you crazy? Right? Like Dan would have said that. There was no way.
That's the quote of the episode. That's the quote of the episode right there.
There was no way he was going to come to Procter & Gamble. He watched his dad work there his whole career. I believe, you know, to your point, he was kind of, there was living life in the fast lane kind of going on, I'm sure. And believe there was maybe even a car accident involved, some stuff that got Dan shaken. And then, yeah, you're right. He went back. Got that CS degree, and turns out, hey, maybe P&G is not such a bad place to be working in IT.
Or I can make it my way here.
Oh, yeah. You know? And he did. Like, he never, again, he never came in. I was like, okay, fine. I'm going to, like, put the good boy hat and shoes on and, you know, operate the way you're supposed to operate. It's like, I'm going to do this however I would do it. And that worked.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's great.
I assume you guys read the article Monisha wrote in Ad Age about him.
Yeah.
Last year.
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. I just, I mean, I never thought about it that way. Like, he's more of a John. I didn't even know. You know what's so funny? I wasn't into the Beatles at the time. I didn't develop my classic rock taste and sensibilities until a little bit later. You know, I moved to Asia and spent my whole time in Asia listening to the Beatles, literally falling in love with them. And, you know, there's like a bunch of artists that I know I'm supposed to listen to as a music lover. Springsteen, Bob Dylan, I listened to when my daughter was born. The Dead. I have a massive blind spot with The Dead still. And so, Aaron, I probably should hit you up for like some advice on where to get started. Mm-hmm. Because as a music lover, I know it's a thing. And it wasn't until I read that article that I knew how much Dan loved the Beatles. And, you know, that was, I came back to Cincinnati for a whole year and everyone had already left. And my girlfriend had left for New York. And I hung out with Dan a lot that one year before I left. I left Beauty. I went up to Fabric. And it's one of those things, like you're thinking about, like you never talked to Dan about the Dead. Like I never talked to Dan about the Beatles. Like I never had that same conversation with him. And it's, you know, would have been a fun one.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it sucks. That's the thing that sucks. I miss him for that for sure. But I'm glad that I got to reflect and say like, oh, wow. Well, I knew a guy who was wildly musically talented and such an inspiration. I love that. I just regret.
We're coming up on time, but I mean, I got to ask any last personal things you remember about Dan? Any funny or interesting stories?
I'd just say I like to reflect on the things that are the most core lessons, you know, that somebody leaves on you, or the most core impression that we've all talked about how Dan molded us to an extent and like how we operate from that point on in our careers. And like so many really, really effective and inspirational people, at the heart of what I observed with Dan is the way he treated people. It was just point blank, the way he treated people. And we've talked about how, you know, P&G, in order to succeed, there's a lot of politics going on. Dan never had to do that, nor would have ever even thought of doing that. It was like so foreign to how he operated. And I don't know about you guys. I've never met a person who would have said anything ill about Dan Hamilton, right? There was no one who would have been like, oh, Dan, he annoys me, or Dan, he's that guy that's trying to build like a media function. Like, what's that? Yeah, you know, there's nothing like that. Like, truly, people just enjoyed being around him. And that's like the thing that I take away from you know, my experience, and that I try to pass on to others at this point in our lives and careers, is there's a better way to live and work. And my God, like how much more enjoyable is it when you do operate that way? So you can be effective and you can have a good time doing it. And that's how Dan operated.
I would also say from my perspective with Dan is he showed that you can be who you are and be successful.
Yeah.
And P&G is, it's an amazing company with amazing talent, very competitive inside. And for someone to be able to go into P&G and still be true to himself and be in a rock band and talk like a rock star, basically, but still have the command and respect of all of your business partners, your agency partners, senior management, because he was so talented and grounded in doing what was right for the business. It showed that, you know, you can get beyond stereotypes and be successful, and it's very inspirational.
And that's our show. Like what you heard? Please subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform. For show notes about this episode, links to things mentioned, or requests for sponsorship, visit pgalums.com/podcast. Follow us on Twitter at pgalumpod. We'd love to hear from you.
Learnings from Leaders is a production of the P&G Alumni Network, a global nonprofit founded by former P&Gers committed to community, enrichment, and philanthropy. With more than 45,000 registered members worldwide, the network connects alums through global conferences, local chapters, industry events, and online content. Our nonprofit foundation supports economic empowerment communities around the world. To find out more, visit pgalums.com.
That's it for this week. I've been Roman Segal.
And I'm still Andrew Tarvin. Thanks for joining Learnings from Leaders, the PNG Alumni Podcast. We'll see you next time.